Hello, everyone. I'm Corey.
I'm Eric.
I'm Kate.
And I'm Alec.
And this is the Utini Avatar Show, proud partner of the Utini Network, where we are discussing Avatar: The Last Airbender, the new live-action show on Netflix. Now, this week, we are taking a good look at the final episode of the season. Episode 8, we are traveling back to the Northern Water Tribe, where we're going to meet Godzilla and have a blast. Let's dive in. Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review wherever you get your podcast. Now, before we begin, before we take a look at everything in the finale, we do have to thank the sponsor of this week's episode, the United Patreon community. Head over to patreon.com/utini to see everything that our community has to offer. Stay tuned for more details about that later in the show. All right, folks, let's hit it. The finale. Finale of the show. When did you guys watch it? Recently?
Hour and a half ago.
2 days ago. Wow, you finished it recently.
I did. I wanted to make sure it was instant. I wanted that gratification right before the show. I definitely didn't just have an entire weekend where I was too busy to do anything else. but yeah, I'm fresh, baby.
We watched it earlier this week. We wanted to watch it literally as soon as we got done with recording our last episodes, but it kind of slipped my mind, honestly. And I'm kind of glad I waited. Alec, when did you watch it?
I watched it for the first time last night. I was getting ready to go to bed and then read our Slack channel and I was like, oh, crap. Better watch this thing.
That's right. Gotta watch the finale.
So I watched it last night. I didn't get to my normal three watch. I did a two watch this time. But
I was gonna ask.
Do you even care, Alec? Stumble into the finish line.
I somewhat care. On the list of episodes, I think this probably lands at like the, you know, number four or five on my list of top.
All right.
It's not the best, it's not the worst. It's pretty good. I think it's like 50 minutes, about 50, 53, something like that.
It was long. Although this show in general, I think most of the episodes were pretty close in length, actually.
They're all pretty close.
Yep. This one, I think the different vibe that this episode had for it compared to the previous ones is that it was like one giant continuous story rather than like several like pretty large subplots. Like it felt like it was all part of the same things. The last battle scenes kind of have that vibe, I guess,
saved like a third of the budget for this.
And then they definitely return to the kingdom a little bit at the end by being like, and then this ending, and then this ending, and then this tease for the next season, which is great. I mean, if you're a finale and you don't do that in 2024, I'm like, come on, play the game. Play the game. Like, that's how you get renewed, you know?
I know. I do want to just go really big picture for a minute and just kind of talk about the similarity and difference from the animated show, because I'm not going to lie, I was a little worried about the finale. Like, the animated show with, you know, Koi... What were they as the internet calling it? Koizilla, I think is what
Koizilla.
It's either Codzilla or Koizilla.
You can guess. Koizilla, Codzilla. I've seen them both. And I was a little worried about it because even in the animated show, I was like, all right, that's a pretty weird looking fish.
It's a pretty weird looking fish.
That's what you had to think. Like, he's a fish, but he has hands. It's like that weird level of evolution.
He's more like
a
hellbender, which you've probably
salamander.
Hellbender.
If you don't know what a hellbender is, go look it up.
Giant, scary salamander. I've seen one in a bucket once.
What?
I knew somebody that caught one on a fishing line and they brought it in a bucket.
How big was it?
To a family cookout. And they're like, everybody, look at this hellbender. And then we put it in the creek together.
How do you earn the name hellbender?
Well, like... So it's bigger than your head.
Yeah, it's like 12, 14 inches long. I mean, it's a giant salamander.
Is that like a new bending style?
Hellbending.
What does that mean?
Well, we got that new, there's that new animated show coming, or the animated movie with Aang and all them as adults. Maybe they'll finally go into the spirit realm and then go straight into hell and learn hellbending.
Hellbending is the name of the documentaries by the filmmakers that left the production of this show.
Oh my god.
Oh no.
That was great, Corey. Well done. That was great.
Thank you. I'm proud of that. Although they have come around, though. We talked about that earlier, I think, in the season of our show, they all said they'd come around on the show. But anyway, big picture stuff. I was worried about this being different. I didn't know how the CGI was going to look with this giant fish. I honestly did not even know what they were going to do with the giant fish. Part of me thought that maybe they were going to avoid it entirely.
We talked about this last episode a little bit, and this is where I get to say, I was earnestly confused that we were even questioning if it happened. because I'm like, that is such a, it was such a tentpole of the season. Now, I didn't know it was going to get as much viewing as it did, because you know how like in some Godzilla movies, they show like the head through a window and the tail,
because
they're like, they don't have enough budget, but like you said, Corey, props to Netflix for saving like a third of the budget to be like, nah, it's the Godzilla fish episode. Like,
it.
You're doing
it. It was gutsy. It was gutsy and ballsy to do that at all. I mean, like,
flipping
like,
beautiful.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was very impressed by how it looked. And like the scope and scale of it. And just
the violence.
Yeah, the destructive
the capture. The destruction. Yeah.
Really enjoy it. My favorite part of the episode pretty easily, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like the fish.
Yeah, very, very, very impressed with Godzilla, Koizilla. Yeah. Very impressed. I was really glad that they did it well. Honestly, the integration of kind of Aang a little bit more in with the, like him being inside of it, and we kept seeing him was.
He's always been inside of it.
He was, but like they kept all that, and it looked very true to the original. Like,
I liked that we could see him far off.
Yeah.
If you squinted.
Mm-hmm. I really liked also just how. I forgot the kid's name. How he handled like the Avatar state, like with your eyes all glowing and everything glowing, like it could have read very emotionless and very empty.
Yeah.
But I actually read it as power and presence. I'm like, oh, I think Aang is now. You saw him losing it a bit, kind of like how Katara was afraid of. You really saw the power start to overcome him, and I thought he actually physically handled that very well because that's kind of an intangible.
Yeah, and they spent the time to actually explain, like, see his. His thought process of becoming the monster. Where in the show, he just kind of is like, okay, I'm going to do this thing now. There's no like real explanation.
Oh, yeah.
He just kind of jumps in.
Kind of does it, yeah. It's like, you just kind of accept it for
My name's Aang. Welcome to Jackass. Today I'm going to be a giant fish monster. Let's go!
I mean, that's pretty much what happened in the original show. And I saw a lot of conversation about that because, like, if you really get into the gritty details, the plot of this episode was quite convoluted.
Oh, it's bananas. It's bananagrams.
Yes,
I loved it.
I didn't say it was bad. I just said it was convoluted. Yeah. It was confusing and complex.
Yes.
Like, interweaving.
I would argue it was complex, not confusing.
Maybe
it made
fair.
Sense, but there were a lot of different strings that you had to follow.
And I think
I want to talk about a couple
of things. Yeah, let's zoom in detail, because I think I agree with you that there. I realized watching it that, I think a lot of the parts had been hinted in other episodes of the animated show. Mm-hmm. And in this one, they kind of put everything in the finale. Like, they hit all the beats, but I do think
really
I realized, like, when you're watching a 22-episode animated show, you do kind of put stuff a little earlier in the season, so by the end everything's coming together, as opposed to dumping kind of all of it at once.
Yeah,
I want to talk about a couple of the very specific points. I'm kind of going off script a little bit here, but
finale day.
A couple of things I want to talk about is how Zhao like planned to kill the fish was very interesting.
I knew that he had a knife in that box.
It's a special
knife.
You
were like,
I thought it was a Skrull explaining
you,
it. Perhaps.
Yeah, you kept saying it was a Skrull. I was like, it's
a
dagger.
In the animated show, he went to the library and learned about it and stuff, right?
Yeah.
I thought it was a Skrull. But in this episode, this is why I say it's a little convoluted. In this episode, it was a special knife.
It was Korok's knife.
It was Korok's knife.
Yes, Korok's knife.
From the relics in Roku's temple.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was heavily implied that it sort of has, you know, it's a knife with special powers kind of thing.
Yeah,
right?
It's
spirit
like a
world knife.
Yeah, is it made from like the tooth of something or?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Like a Chris knife made from the tooth of Shai Hulud on the planet Arrakis. I got Dune into it.
Dune reference.
What? I got Dune into it.
Like,
everybody.
What?
Eric somehow is able to put Dune references into everything, and he just starts speaking Chinese. Basically.
You said a tooth
knife.
And
we just
knife.
Smile
it's right there.
And not along.
I know.
Yeah.
The special spirit knife is new, right? In the animated show, Zhao just like, you know, fire slapped a fish.
Oh, yeah. He burned it.
Gave him a little.
He cooked it.
A little catfish grill. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Catfish grill chop. Classic.
That's right. It was. And I thought it was really interesting and unique. It was heavily implied that, like, there was much more spiritual explanation of this, right? Mm-hmm. They come to Earth for a day to experience mortality.
Yeah.
And, like, this is the only, knife that can kill it. And, like, this is the only knife that can be done. Like, it was much more, there was much more exposition, I think, about that than there was.
Well, yeah, because in the cartoon, they're just like, they gave up their, you know, their spiritual stuff a little bit. They're a little mortal now.
Yeah.
They live here in the pond forever.
Although,
you can just kill them whenever you want.
One,
they get really pissed off when, like,
that?
gets really pissed off when the algae builds up. We have to get in there with the pool skimmer, you know what I mean? They get really mad if we don't get the leaves out of
their
pool.
Here's my question. Is there an actual thing as an ice moon? Is this like an actual deal?
An ice
because,
moon?
Because typically when they do these kind of spiritual things, it's all based in some form of like real life event.
Oh.
You know what I mean? Like comets do pass and like, you know what I mean?
Oh, I'm sure.
It's usually based on something that has some actual...
Yeah, I mean, moon spirits aren't anything new, you know? Like, I think they're like...
Oh, you're talking about the phase of the moon. They called it the ice moon.
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. I Googled,
they called
I
it
Googled
an
ice
moon.
I don't know.
The show typically doesn't... I mean, it doesn't typically make up things when it can use something that already exists in our world when it comes to that kind of stuff.
Can I tell you the moment that made me really, like... I find it really enjoyable when Iroh started to say, like, we don't know what they could be. They could be... two trees that are souls. They can be two insects and a blade. I love that. And then Zhao's like, I think it's the fish.
It's, hey, right here, buddy.
Nah, it's the fish, bro.
Right here.
And Iroh's like, damn it.
I think he knew it was the fish. I think he was trying to distract.
No, but deflect. Just the quickness of the cut, I find that just an enjoyable where Iroh was like, I'm going to be very mystical and I think I can save this. And Zhao's nah, bro, it's clearly those fish. And I was like,
I loved it. I love the moment of realization was depicted really well too. Like you see the gears turning and spinning, the yin and the yang. Like, that was done really well.
Yeah. And the imagery is beautiful from the animated show. I mean, the like koi fish, yin yang. Like it is, it is such an almost effortless image because it's so recognizable to so many cultures. Like it means so much already. So a lot of the storytelling takes place just in the visual of the fish, and then they of course add on the stakes of the text and everything, but. I liked them a lot. I liked that they kept that.
It's also like the only place warm enough that plants grow.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah,
the
that was
grove thing was
yeah,
pretty dope,
the whole
actually.
Grove was fascinating. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was like, they have their own little, I don't know.
It looked like it was pretty big,
greenhouse.
Too.
Yeah.
The
outer view from the top, it looked like it was, I expected like a little oasis.
Yeah.
But it looked like
definitely
it stretched pretty far.
Bigger than the animated show, because they know at the,
I think
we're jumping all over, like at the end when he gives her the water from the oasis, I remember like, oh yeah, the oasis, that very small pond, the small isolated place, and now it's like, this is a key, like almost a jungle forest. I'm like, where did they get to a jungle forest? And I'm like, oh, the oasis
that
has that much power.
Yeah, I liked it. I was a big fan of that. And there was also a lot of nuance around Princess Yue and her sort of becoming the moon spirit too. I thought that was done really well too. That was a pretty big difference. You know, she froze Sokka in place because she knew. She knew
that
how he would respond.
So
he's like, I could be into this. Wait, no.
Yeah.
Not what I meant.
It was quite a pivotal moment, I think, for Princess Yue. And
well,
Sokka.
They foreshadowed it with Momo.
They did.
Yeah.
They foreshadowed with Momo. Interesting choice. I want to come back to that in a minute.
Yeah, we'll come back to that.
But Princess Yue, you know, she kind of had this huge moment of emotional sacrifice, and it was much more intentional, I feel like, this time around, too.
Yeah, and I think one of the more interesting things for her in this episode is an exchange that she has with her dad, where her dad is like, you're going to be the future. Like, we need to keep you safe.
Yeah.
Because in the animated show, after she becomes the moon spirit, he kind of says, like, well, this was always going to be her fate. When she was born, I saw a vision of her, of a beautiful girl becoming the moon spirit, and I knew it would happen one day. So it's an interesting choice, I think. So, you know, is he trying to comfort her, or does maybe this version, he didn't have that vision kind of a thing? I was trying to read between the lines there to see what the differences were.
I liked that they gave, I think they gave her more independence in the show.
Maybe.
Yeah, agency maybe.
Yeah,
because her dad was like overly protective of her.
Oh yeah,
that's why he was like, you can't go anywhere, you can't do anything, you can't fight.
Less so in
like, please.
Less so in the live action maybe than it was in the animation, but still, I actually saw that kind of feedback in some of the research I was doing for the show, that like there was a lot of comments about the amount of agency and independence that Yue had in the show, which was. Great. That was a great change.
She was like well respected by the men in the village.
Yeah.
Even though the culture didn't necessarily respect women in the same way in terms of their abilities.
Yeah.
They gave her a lot of
respect. I think she very much has that that sense of like royalty that you would see with like a, you know, a female in the royal family. Mm-hmm. You know, like her, she goes out to the people and she's very like, you know, the people's champion kind of a thing.
Yeah.
100%. Whenever Han says like, she is the best of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
how do you think that they like the actual depiction of the sacrifice itself? Right. I mean, she sort of like, she freezes Sokka into place. Like, how did that hit you compared to like the animated show?
I miss Eric. Ghost UA.
Yeah.
I'd say that.
Ghost UA. I think I loved the more ethereal nature of the animated show. Mm-hmm. And this is not fair to the live action, but in the animated show, like, I wasn't quite sure what was going to happen. And in this one, it's like, oh, it's the sacrifice part. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I can't recapture that same moment of revelation. Yeah. I think they did it very well, but I agree. I think if she would have come down as a spirit to like kiss Sokka, that would have been honestly not fitting in live action. So I see why they kind of avoided that. But I do think in the animated show, that was a nice little kind of coda on the end of that moment.
Mm. Oh, maybe what if we had, maybe we should have like seen the fox. That might have been interesting.
Oh, that would have, yeah. Maybe that would have been a cool way to get around that, like, and had that button up a little bit. Cause I hope, you know, at the beginning of our season, Kate was like, I need secret tunnel. I was like, if they don't have the lines, my girlfriend turned into the moon, that's rough, buddy. If that's not in season two, I quit.
Like that, I know.
We got to keep that because that's one of the best lines in the whole show.
You know, I will say that they looked back at Princess Yue in the animated show a lot. It seemed like Sokka was constantly thinking about
a recurring
thing. And I always thought it was a little weird, the animated show, because it's only like one episode. Like, where, like, how close could they have possibly been? You know, but like, I feel weirdly that the relationship between Sokka and Yue in the live action was maybe
a little
more thought out. Yeah. The pacing seemed a little better.
Their chemistry was also intensely good. I mean,
it was.
There's the easy answer of like, other than the 7-year-olds and his sister in the tribe, he's seen Suki, who he has a crush on, and then Yue, who he has a crush on. Like, there's the two women he's ever seen in his life, so he's like, you're the one! But I do think their chemistry, frankly, his chemistry with both those women this season was actually quite good.
That is true.
Yeah, the ultimate
Rizmaster.
I'm so
split on that.
Yes, right. Sokka, Rizmaster. Can they call him that in season two? Get the kids into the show?
Yeah. That's right. Rizbending.
Yeah,
Riz.
Sokka, you've always had the Riz inside.
Hellbending and Riz bending. Yeah.
Thanks, Aang.
Speaking of Sokka, Sokka got quite a lot of character growth in the last couple episodes of this season, I feel like. And I have to say, I'm a big fan of the sort of recurring sort of father figure type storytelling that we've been getting with Sokka and various characters. What did you guys think about the sort of final moments with Sokka? And he's talking to Yue's father, right? The sort of leader of the tribe. That was pretty intense. What do you guys think that does for the sort of characterization that we're getting from Sokka? Whereas maybe in the animated show, it was a little more, he's kind of figuring things out on his own. But in this show, it seems like he's getting a lot of kind of fatherly
advice. He's getting a lot of guidance.
I like it. I think that worked. I like Sokka's kind of continual search for a father, as well as trying to be more paternal in his responsibilities. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's been a nice through line throughout the season. And this was kind of a way for him to see, hey, Water Nation dad person.
I know.
Since my own father, you know, talked a bunch of shit behind my back when I was a kid, can I talk to you and get your approval? And I think that was a nice nice replacement for him to kind of close that chapter of his life, now becoming his own man.
Well, I think what I'm seeing from Sokka in these last couple episodes is more that the people around him are starting to recognize the things that he already believes in himself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's giving him validation, and it's giving him courage and strength, you know, and he's starting to actually feel like he may have some place in this world. That has some kind of use to it. Now, he does kind of throw himself under the bus with Arnok when he's like, you know, everybody else is fighting, and you know, I didn't do anything to help, and blah 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 blah, and you know, he's feeling really 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 bad about himself, and Arnok gives him that kind of step up, and hey, you know, she made her choice, but at least she had somebody there with her, and you played an important role. I think, you know, when this, you basically get to see Sokka's new role as soon as the episode starts, and they do that attack on the Fire Nation ship, which is a bit of a step away from the OG cartoon, because in the cartoon, it's just Aang that attacks the ship. Here we get all of Team Avatar, but Sokka immediately starts calling shots. Hey, Aang, go to the front of the ship. Hold him down. Katara, you do this. I'm going to go up here. You know, and then we get this, like, epic Tom Cruise Mission Impossible, exit scene out of the... sky,
jumping off of Appa, like rolling onto the ship, smashing everything, and I'm like, "Yo, dude, I hope I remember this point because it ties into something we're gonna talk about later that I have a similar comment on. But that was a cool moment.
Yeah, but Sokka's character has absolutely grown a ton, and I think a lot of it is just from outside influences giving him validation.
Well, I like that this is making him more human because we're. It's not just about your parent figure. It's not just about your mother or your father or your caregiver that influences you over your life. It's a conglomeration of men and women. And these are the men that impacted Sokka. And I really like that they're telling this story. He's like a conglomeration of all these men that are influencing him. And I also thought it was... I actually did not see... that as a father-son moment.
Hmm. Yeah, interesting.
His apology to her father, it felt like a boyfriend apologizing.
Interesting.
And I thought it was an interesting dynamic because he said, you know, like, nothing could have stopped my daughter.
Yeah.
You didn't do anything wrong. Right.
Yeah. It was validation. And it was a meaningful moment, I think, 100%. I mean, Sokka has not really had a lot of that kind of emotional support, it sounds like, for a while since his dad's been gone, right? And
well, he also hasn't, like, truly failed at protecting anybody.
Right.
And this one, he did. He was left to be in charge of his whole village.
He had one job, as it were.
Yeah, and he did, and they were fine. And Katara was fine. His little sister was fine. But he was in charge of this one girl whom he really liked, and she died. That's pretty traumatic.
Well, she sacrificed herself.
She did, but she died. She died.
Yeah, he still fails.
She did.
Aang fails too. She did. I mean, there's a lot of
life is failure.
Where did her body go? Do you think it just like disappeared like Obi-Wan Kenobi? Is that what happened?
No, it's in the spirit world somewhere. It's
did
the
she
fox
leave behind her robe, but not the rest of her clothes?
I think I like this one better. Okay.
Nope. Had thought. Didn't go there. Proud of myself.
She became the fish. Is that what happened?
Yeah, there it is. She became the fish.
That is
was
what
there,
happened.
Was there a second fish?
Yeah. It came back. It started floating around the pool, and that's what made the spear monster be like, my friend
fish.
Is back.
Yep. Oh, I see. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I like the implication that the spirit monster would just be roaming the world, causing destruction.
Yeah.
I also liked that.
Well, since this job is done.
It was mourning.
Yeah.
It was. It's like... That was
dude,
cool.
Just let it go to the Fire Nation.
Wrath.
Give it like a month.
That's what
war
that's
is
what,
over.
Iroh called it. Iroh called him
Wrath. Yeah,
dude, that was good. Iroh had some great lines.
He did.
He was just a.
He
great
was on the battlefield again. He was in his element, man.
Speaking of characters who are on the battlefield, let's talk about Momo for a second.
Yeah,
that was a choice. I have to say,
dislike. Can I say that?
Was
that? A don't hurt.
That
the
was
pets.
My flying
it's
cow.
So, he was fine. Don't psych us out like that. It's 2024. That doesn't fly anymore. Straight up.
Momo has been a character that we've talked about this. Like, he's there 1 second, and then, like, 40 minutes worth of stuff goes by, and you're like, what happened to Momo? And then they bring him in for 2 seconds. And now he's, like, all of a sudden a pivotal character. Like, the idea that Sokka loves Momo to me, like, I couldn't get there because I haven't seen any
scenes. I was also confused.
Where I was like,
I agree.
Sokka cares that much about Momo?
I know, dude. There was no
point. He hates Momo. He doesn't hate Momo, but, like, he has a competition with Momo. Momo steals all the snacks.
They've had...
He annoys him.
Yeah. It was too far for the audience because that doesn't.
Yes.
And then it was also not built up with Sokka specifically. You're absolutely right. Absolutely right.
It was a choice, 100%.
It
really
felt,
weird choice.
It felt one of those point A to point B. We need something to happen.
We need to show the healing.
I can think of 10 different ways
yes.
to get there.
Yes.
Unfortunately, correct.
I
unfortunately,
I
correct.
Yes.
I won't lie. I almost thought Momo was like actually dead.
Dude,
we were
he looked
just
squished.
Gonna lose Momo forever.
I did. I thought for a hot second.
Well,
like,
they hold his limp little body, and I was like, they were like, his heart's not beating. I'm like, oh my God.
Also, yep. This is something that in the cartoon happens with Yue, where Sokka like immediately touches something, and he's like, it's dead. Yep. Or it's alive. And that's like, and I'm like, you're not a doctor. Like, how do you, like, you just immediately touch it and you're like, yep, dead. Or yep, still alive.
He's the only one that knows where pulses are. Only one in the whole world.
Can we, like, maybe get a second opinion?
Yeah. Dr. Sun.
Oh, man. There's a website that Caitlin and I use occasionally called Does the Dog Die?
Oh, yeah. I use that for every movie now. Every single
Dude,
one.
Yes.
There's a website. If you're listening to this, you've never heard of this. Does the dog die?
Look it up.
If there's a dog in a book,
you're
like, oh dear. I don't
know.
No,
it's not just dogs.
It's every trigger warning imaginable,
horses,
actually, now. Like,
cats,
animals. It's animals. Yeah.
Sexual abuse, domestic violence, anything you
spiders.
Want to find out whether it has a trigger in it.
It's pretty good.
Vomiting.
It's a good website.
If you hate vomiting, you can also look up to see if there's vomiting in this book or movie.
Glad we got to vomit.
But yeah, does the dog die? Best.
Speaking of vomit,
best resource.
Decision to use Momo.
Vomit. Yeah, I didn't love that decision. So
nope,
no, me either. I've not seen a single positive comment about that.
That's
either.
Probably
everybody's pretty upset about it. 100%.
It's probably my only flying cow for this episode.
Dude, me too.
Or at least my main
actually.
Flying cow is this.
Yeah, didn't love it
for sure. I want to talk about another character for a second. Let's go and talk about Katara because. A lot of really good action with Katara in this episode. A lot of personal character growth with Katara.
Oh,
I think
that's when I cried. Katara was when I cried. Okay, sorry. Go on.
Like every time she's on screen.
So,
yeah.
No. There was one scene where Katara goes to Paku, and is like, "I have who you need." And then it just cuts to all the women in the village. I immediately start
it's the Avengers moment with Captain Marvel.
It was smoothly done. It wasn't as controversial as the Avengers moment. I don't think. Like, I thought it felt native in the scene. Mm-hmm. Like, it felt right. Although I did see a really funny comment online about how terrible of a decision it is to put all your combat medics on the front line.
Yeah, not great.
Bad call.
Yeah. I'm looking in. I had a comment earlier that said I want to come back to you, and it ties into Katara here because the question I see in the outline is an exact question I had. You know, what are the thoughts on Katara's mastery of waterbending without a mentor? She has that line of "I found a master, me." Really cool moment. I didn't love the choice only because in this world, I really love how much the discipline and training of the elements is a core part. It's very martial arts, right? Like, you train, you learn the forms.
Yeah.
And I get the empowering message of, like, I'm going to learn this myself and teach myself. And then and Katara eventually becomes, you know, Aang's teacher in the show. But, like,
Zuko has the line in the animated show, he said it in this episode.
Yeah.
Excuse me, as well. It says, you found a master.
Yeah.
Right?
And
And I think...
But she has...
She didn't really use the scroll. I tell, like, she... We kind of got that up, but she didn't really use it. And then the waterbending master, like, I think it's a way cooler moment if she teaches him that she is actually worthy, and then he should teach her, and then she becomes a student and stuff. So I see why they did it for story. I just... I think we missed out on the point of the bending evolution as it relates to martial arts.
Well, I don't think at any point in this live action we've seen Paku look like a particularly masterful waterbender. I think he's looked like a good waterbender.
I agree.
But in the animated, like, they have scenes of him doing all kinds of crazy water tornadoes.
Oh, yeah.
Just like,
it's wild, dude.
Absolutely destroying.
The tentacles.
Yeah.
And it seems like in the live action, they've taken more of a route, and maybe this is just the way that I've chosen to read the room or the situation that they've created, is that the waterbenders, you know, the Southern Water Tribe is basically wiped out. There's no benders at all down there. And they've, you know, and the Fire Nation has really tried their hardest to steal, kill, or destroy as much as they can any form of water bending that exists.
Yep.
So I think, you know, with the Northern Tribe being so isolated, and it doesn't sound like the Fire Nation has really attacked them since, what, like 80 years ago? That's the most recent, you know, armor that they have. I think the idea here that I'm getting from it is is that the Fire Nation doesn't really go up there. They haven't really been in any fights. Nobody has any experience, and I don't think that there are any like true waterbending masters left. Katara looking at herself as having to be her own master is because with her drive ability, you know, some of it given and a lot of it just in sheer determination, and the fact that she feels like she's responsible for making sure that the Avatar reaches his mission, she's given herself this level of onus of like, I have to own this, I have to become this, and mm-hmm. this is my drive and my sole mission in life right now is to become the best waterbender so that I can help the Avatar.
Yeah.
I liked it. I would disagree with you, Eric, but sure. I also have never done martial arts, so I don't know how necessary having a in-person teacher is. Like, you can study forms, you can study mm-hmm. things without being in person. Like, I've learned to knit sweaters.
Was Katara on Zoom?
By myself.
Or she was like, hey guys, welcome to waterbending. Leave a like.
Listen, there's a lot of flying. You can learn an art. She watched a lot of YouTube while riding off.
Exactly.
She had the waterbending scroll. Like she had things to learn. Yeah. And I think the styles.
She's naturally gifted.
The styles is more about learning how to move your chi throughout your body.
Yeah.
And create power.
Yeah. Right?
If I remember correctly, waterbending is based off of Tai Chi, isn't it?
I don't know.
I think so. Yeah, push and pull, and like the kind of movement of energy around specifically.
I
think in general, it's a fair criticism of the show as a whole is sort of the lack of the
mentorship
and teaching of bending.
Like Suki and Sokka, that great flirty training scene was one of my favorites of the season. And there was there where she's like, hold it like this, and he learned, oh, I respect you as a warrior because I see what this is, and then my skills become better, and I become this. And whereas I think I didn't see him learn the Mission Impossible stuff that he did in this, which was cool, I do kind of wish we just would have seen a little more of what you learned being followed up on in the finale as opposed to new skill tree things we didn't necessarily see you unlock.
I will say, having gone back and watched the season finale of the animated 2, they have the same line in there of, you know, Aang still needs to learn waterbending. Like they establish in the animated that that he doesn't know waterbending either.
Interesting. Yeah.
They do establish that, and they call this specifically. I see what you're saying though. This was a common criticism that I read about too. Was like Paku says that Katara is a master, and maybe it's not like you're a real master. You know what I mean? Like it was more like I respect you as if you were a master.
You've earned the credibility.
But the way that he said it made it sound like you have now meet the level needed to be master.
As opposed to like an honorific.
Forth and be master.
I've had this thought just now. They might be setting her up to be as not as powerful as Aang, but as powerful in his domain as Aang. Yeah. Because I remember they have set up Aang had masters and surpassed them immediately before he was like 5 or something.
That's true.
So that's true. Maybe this is Katara. Maybe she's just a really powerful, gifted waterbender.
This might be a stretch to pull in, but I kind of get that feeling from like Anakin when he's like, I'm on the council.
Yeah.
I'm not a master.
That's a midichlorian count.
It's like being a master is not a title. It like you have to earn it.
Right.
You know, but not having that title really hurts.
It was brushed over in the same way that we did actually get through all 8 episodes without seeing Aang waterbend a single time. Somehow that is possible. I don't know how that's possible.
I don't know.
But I want to talk more. Yeah, I want to talk about that. That's a good transition, I think, to talk about Aang a little bit, because that was another piece of the story that required, I think, some nuance and was a little bit convoluted as well, in a good way, I would say. Aang essentially decided as the Avatar that it was his destiny to take on the role of the Moon Spirit, right? That's kind of what was heavily implied, right?
He took over as the Water Spirit.
The ocean,
Ocean
Spirit. Yeah, I mean, basically what it boils down to is Kura talking to him about how powerful the elemental spirits are and that they overwhelmingly surpass the power of the Avatar alone.
Yeah.
So he decides to allow them to channel themselves
They implied it was permanent, though, I think is the thing I'm trying to say. Well, they implied it was permanent.
They're implying that it's permanent in the sense that the ocean spirit will never let him go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's possessed. Yep.
Which was cool. I thought so. That was good. That was interesting. It was more than just Aang is Avatar State, and in the Avatar State, he made a big fish. You know what I mean?
I thought it was more, it made more sense that this powerful spirit would have these capabilities, but Aang might not.
Yes.
Yeah.
Completely agree.
It feels like something where the spirit has the ability to do something like this, but it has to be invited to do it.
Yeah.
Like it can't just take him over whenever it wants. He has to allow it to happen.
Yeah, I think so too. And, you know, what do you guys think about sort of the conclusion of some of those plot points that were set up in the previous episode, kind of about like you have to do this alone, your friends don't matter. Like there, you know, there was this sort of, you know, there was those moments between Katara and Avatar and Aang where she's like speaking to him and kind of subconsciously almost. It was kind of weirdly implied that like surely they're not saying that like he could hear her through the water. I don't think that was really it. It was more like, I'm speaking to you on kind of a spiritual level. Was there kind of relationship, I guess, a little bit? But, like, do you feel like we kind of properly closed the loop on this rely on your friends type of thing, Eric?
I don't think they properly closed it. I think they... I think
this is more... You think Aang's journey is not done yet?
Yeah, maybe? I think he has more to go with that. I think they kind of tried to do a little bit of having their cake and eating it, too. You know, again, like in a 50-minute episode, they introduced a lot and closed a lot. And I think that was part of this episode with the amount of threads they had to deal with. I think the Aang counting on his friends but also having to be his own person is a journey throughout every book, and that's okay. I do wish we would have had, you know, that we had the avatars coming to him, like, one by one in that moment before he became the water spirit. I wish they would have had a little bit more of, like, it's time for you. Like, maybe put a little bit of the dialogue in there. May have been an opportunity, but I don't think they closed it, but I'm also not too bent out of shape because I do think, like you said, it is going to be a long-running part of his character.
Yeah, I would see that. I would see that, too. You know, I think overall it seems like, I don't know, Aang is really having to come to terms with, like, it seems like he grew up a lot in this last couple episodes.
I don't know. It kind of came back around, not in the sense that his friends helped him with this battle, but they did help him process it, because at the after scenes were actually very interesting to me, the aftermath of the battle where he's just like wants to be alone and he sees all this destruction and he's like, this was my fault, and Katara and Sokka come up and they're like, bro, this is just war, this is
That's
what
a
happens
point, actually.
So maybe it does, maybe it's just in a very different way than we would have wanted.
I think, you know, one thing that you see a lot in different stories is this sense of sacrifice, right? We see it with UA.
Yeah, yeah.
And Aang chooses to basically sacrifice himself when he becomes the moon spirit. You know, he's like, I wasn't able to help people in my time. I'm going to do what I can to help this world, yada, yada, yada. But, you know, when he goes in the Avatar state and gets taken over by a spirit, like, he doesn't know what's going to happen. He has no control.
There's no playbook for this anymore. Yeah.
And he kind of assumes that, like, this is it. Like, he's going to die in this form, you know? So I think when the battle's over and he has to face, you know, the truth and the reality of what's going on, it really hits him hard. And I think this is something that's true in life. You know, it's like, you know, it's easier to jump in front of a bullet, you know, than it is to spend 10 well, like,
that is true, Kate.
Sorry,
absolutely true.
I went,
but
sorry.
You know, it's easier to make a split second decision to sacrifice yourself than it is to make a decision to help people over a long period of time.
Yeah,
beautifully said.
So Aang makes an easy choice to sacrifice. It doesn't feel easy, but it's easier than the alternative, right? Of learning all four elements and hanging, blah blah blah. And he's really avoiding learning water, it seems like. But in this moment, he sees a quick option to help that is sacrificial, and he chooses to do the easy thing because he's avoided doing the hard thing for the entire season.
As long as you don't get to an episode of season two where Aang goes like, "Wait, the real master has been me inside all along," and then he's all of a sudden getting water.
I'm like, quit.
No, Aang.
I will quit.
Practice. Get up at 6 in the morning and stretch. Dang it. Like, oh man.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think this, you know, one of the scenes that we talked about earlier is the scene with Katara and the women and Paku mm-hmm. and all that, there's a very, very important, and I think really the overarching theme of this particular episode is when the, and I don't know her name, but when the older woman healer goes to Paku and is like, mm-hmm. I wrote this down, she says, "What good is relying on the past when it stops us from having a future?"
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that really rings true for Aang. And that's basically Aang's whole plot line, is he's holding on to the mm-hmm. past, and because of that, that's he right. can't have a future.
Mm. Makes you think. It's one of those, wow. back when we did the Living Force podcast video, I remember that, we would do the Utini Awards, and quote of the year would have to always pass Corey's test, where you'd say something, Corey would go, So that's one of those quotes that gets the
Speaking of things that make me go, we do have to thank this week's sponsor of the episode. So we will all be, I, me, you, all of us. We'll be right back. Hello, friends. We're taking a short break from the show to talk to you about our vibrant Patreon and Discord community, which we call The United. The United is the heart of the Uteniverse, where fans of Star Wars, nerd culture, and even sports unite. It's all about diving deep into the fandoms we love with a spirit of passion and positivity alongside other fans who share those same values. Now on Patreon, you'll find an exclusive world of content. From behind-the-scenes peeks at our YouTube channel productions to ad-free versions of all of our podcasts alongside other insider updates. It's really your all-access pass to what goes on behind the curtain and on the team at Uteni. But the United is more than just content. It's a community. With features designed to bring us closer, we're building a space where every fan has a voice. As we look to the future, your feedback and involvement will shape the direction of the United. So this is really your chance to be part of a community that's at the heart of our mission, fostering a sense of belonging that's essential for every fan. If you're ready to join the United, head over to our site, uteni.com, to find our Discord, or to patreon.com/uteni to jump into Patreon. Let's make this community stronger together and dive into a world where your passion for fandom becomes a shared adventure. Now, let's get back to the show. All right, before we wrap up this week's episode and the finale of the Avatar show, I do want to talk about a few characters that we have not really touched much this episode, which is our Fire Nation friends.
Yeah.
Some of them are friends, some of them are not our friends.
They're so, Eric's friends.
They're all my friends, and I don't love all my friends, guys. You know,
listen. Let's talk about Zhao for a
second.
Let's do it. Zhao was nuts this episode. Dude, he was like unhinged. I loved it. I loved it. Like,
almost a little bit of a zealot in a little bit of a way, you know? Like,
it makes sense now to me, but this whole season is really, one, I think we can collectively say that, like, the idea of having a Book of Water and a Book of Earth is done. You know, like, that is not going to be the structure of the show.
Right.
But this first season is, like, the story of Zhao. Like, we literally get to see an entire story arc of a character growing, becoming, like, power-hungry, egotistical, and then getting his just revenge.
Yep.
And one of the only characters that was recurring, I think, that got basically a completely different telling of a character.
Yeah.
Like, we were all very hesitant at the beginning of this show. How do you guys feel? Now here at the end, we get to see the conclusion of Crazy Zhao, right? He's nuts. And he's kill the fish. And
I'm upset that he did not get taken by the spirit world. I'm upset by that.
Well, I think he kind of did. I think it's I went back. Okay, the second time I watched it, I looked for that.
Okay.
Because I too was like very upset by this.
Tell me I'm wrong.
I'm pretty sure you're wrong. Because when Iroh hits him, you see him burning, and he's in the water, but the water has that glow that you know the spirit had, and that's kind of what happens right in the show is except it's a lot more in your face because it comes out with hands and grabs him and takes him under.
He gets snatched off the bridge.
How much do you think those hands would have cost in CGI?
Oh man.
$100,000 hand.
I like Zhao all right. I think, again, seeing him as like you said, a completely different character than he was in the animation was key. Like, and good on the actor for making it his own. I think that really goes to, like, 100%. I'm not going to make a carbon copy. I'm going to actually just go the way I want to go with it. And I think it served the story, which is all you can really ask of a character. I think he served his purpose and executed it to the end.
He had some really fantastic lines, too. I love the – I wrote it down, I think. Let me see if I have it here. I love that line that he said to Zuko. He says, the winner is the one without the scar from Daddy.
Yeah, I'm like, bro. Yeah. Bro.
I was like, oh, shit. Oh, he's going to – oh, man.
He's basically setting up Azula's arc because right after that he says, you are the fire in which her iron was forged.
Yep.
I know.
Yeah.
It's good lines.
I was like, oh my gosh, that's incredible. That's so good.
Yep.
It was so good.
I can hear the big bad.
Zuko very well could have, like, that could have not been a good scene, but his response to that really emotional, angry response was so good. It felt really true.
Yep. Yeah,
it felt very, very Zuko. And, you know, they kind of give a throwback to the Agni Kai where, like, he doesn't hurt him and then, you know, tries to get cheap shotted. And then Iroh steps in and helps.
Dude, Iroh, can we talk about the fact that in this show, Iroh straight up killed him?
Yeah.
Because he wanted to in the Spirit Oasis, Corey.
I know,
he
dude,
did
it
say,
wasn't.
I will unleash this tenfold.
He did.
That was a good line.
Yeah, no, Iroh was like, all right, I'm done with this. I'm done with this.
He's like, I'm done with you.
I'm officially tired of this. Yeah, it was heavily implied that, like, he didn't just fall off the bridge. It was heavily implied that Iroh burned him to death.
Yes.
He got violent. Scorched.
Yes.
Yes. The sound effect was really cool, too. I don't know if you noticed.
Oh, yeah.
There was, like, some crazy dragon thing happening. It was cool, dude. That was really good. Big fan of that.
Yeah. I like Zhao. I think his character arc in general was really good throughout the show. I think it, you know, the Fire Nation, I think we can all agree, has really been a huge focus of this show.
Yep.
More than our famed three of team Avatar at this point. They've
I know.
Really spent a lot of time fleshing out the Fire Nation. So
yep.
I think I like to do something a little different than the animated show. You know, it was so much Avatar.
It's making more sense of pulling in all the characters.
Yeah.
They don't feel like they're coming out of nowhere.
And it's such a fascinating aspect of the world. I mean, the villains are always interesting, but the Fire Nation as a culture is so interesting and horrifying that it's like we've gotten to see that Zuko's the good one, so that's what the Fire Nation are like. It's like, nah, dude, the Fire Nation are fascist, terrifying people. Like, that is what Dad is, that's what Azula are, that's what Zhao is. Like, and then Zuko, which makes Zuko's contrast, I think, even that much more impressive, especially in this episode. Again, another banger from Zuko. He's my dude. I mean, no spoilers for, I guess, our end of season conversation, but, like, dude's been killing it every single episode he's ever been in. And I thought putting them all together in this episode really highlighted that contrast.
I like the small inclusion of the balloon in this episode as well.
Yep.
Oh,
nice
yeah.
Nice little nod.
Yep. Nice little nod. You know, in the animated show, if you remember, the Fire Nation got the balloon because of the battle with the engineer guy, the mechanist or whatever, right?
Yep.
And at the very end, the balloons were on the ground. They figured it out. And it wasn't until much later when Sokka realizes that, you know, he was part of that. But this episode was very much just here and on the nose. And he's like, I recognize it. I helped build it, right? Like, that was cool.
Yeah.
I like that small detail that will help, I think, that move along nicely in the
future. Thing, while we're talking about Fire Nation machines of war, one thing I do really, really want to see at some point are these tanks.
Yes. Inchworm tanks.
Yeah, man.
Flip over. I don't think it's going to... Well, I don't know. Everything has looked so much better than I ever expected it to look. Every time I think something's going to look like trash, it's been incredible.
It doesn't.
Yeah, but that's a lot of budget for those tanks. Though. They gotta save some.
You don't have to show them up close. You can do the thing with Flopsy. You find a way to work it in. You know, it's like
they need to use miniatures like in Star Wars. We don't need a full size when we see
every time we see the Fire Nation fully attack with all of their might, these tanks are always there.
Yeah,
it's true.
Every time.
It's true. It's a good use of bending powers, too. We get to see lots of benders do cool stuff.
Yes. Love that stuff. So maybe that'll be the Yamashu. Yeah. Like you're saying, the Yamashu big old battle.
Can we talk about how cool it was to see the wreckage of all the Fire Nation afterwards?
Yeah.
Because, the monster, I thought he was going to, take them all out like he does in the show, but he just sent a tsunami after all of them and just, took them out in one wave.
They moved him out of the way in the show, but in this, it was violent. Like, he broke them in half and smashed them. People were falling off the ships. It was violent, man.
Oh, God. And Iroh's like, maybe General Lee is still alive.
Yeah, I know. There's that
maybe moment. They're waiting for us.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe.
That was good.
Maybe. I will say, like, there were a lot of cinematic, camera views. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure most of this, pretty much all of this, is some kind of post effect, right? So they get to choose kind of the camera view that they really want to use. A lot of them seem to be taken from like huge blockbuster films. Like there were scenes mm-hmm. that were very like Pirates Rim-esque
or
Lord of the Rings Rim-esque. There's one after the battle where it's like a top down view in the city and you're mm-hmm. like seeing people walk through the rubble. Like that was very Lord of the Rings for me.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean there were things like that were very, very enjoyable, and I feel like are like tried, true, tested like ways to tell a story that are absolutely beautiful but also haunting.
Yep.
You know, and really mm-hmm. really make it rich and powerful.
Completely agree.
100% agree. The show finally, you know, as we're wrapping up here, the show ended with Iroh and Zuko, and I'm not sure if this was the big moment necessarily where do you guys think it was the big moment where they essentially decided they're turning their back on the Fire Nation? Was that this episode, you think? Because, you know, you remember in the animation, they're like, cut the
Yeah, no, I don't I don't remember. Think they're there yet. It's, I don't think they're there
no.
yet.
I don't, yeah.
We need and they're setting it up at the end of this, but we need the Zuko Alone episode to really...
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
I think they're... What did he say? Didn't he say something like a man needs his rest or something
yeah.
at the end? So yeah. I think they're going to take a break. I think they're yeah. going to, like, take a step back. I mean, General Iroh did just watch them almost.
Way to prioritize your own self-care, Zuko. Well done.
Yeah.
Get your wrist back, young king.
I think you're close there. Them interfering in the spirit world was a big no-no yes. for Iroh.
Great point.
Yeah,
great point.
That's true. Yeah, they crossed the line for him. And I don't know if Zuko mm-hmm. feels that way yet, right?
No, I don't think he's there.
Not there yet.
He's torn.
Yeah, he's not joining Team Avatar yet. You know what I mean? Like, he's not completely
yeah.
turned into...
Well, yeah. Yeah. There's going to be some things in Season 2, especially early on, that we already know we're probably going to see that are going to mm-hmm. really hammer that home. But we're setting it up, right?
Yep.
Like, we know what's going to happen. We're setting it up. We're just not at the finish line.
Yes, sir.
Question. Okay, this is a little Easter egg. Is Katara's necklace, is it still her mom's necklace?
I don't know.
We get any hints in this show
no.
about
they,
that?
They don't mention it at all.
Okay.
Acknowledged.
Yep.
Interesting choice. Kind of a small detail.
Yeah. Well, it's an important detail. They talk about that necklace a lot.
It does.
We'll see.
Zuko uses it as a plot device in the mm-hmm. animated show. But yeah, interesting. I'm not sure. There was a moment where I felt like when they were in the canoe that... like this was the end for them with the Fire Nation. I think there are maybe some lingering doubts, but I guess we'll just have to see how it progresses. Overall, frankly, I was very impressed with the finale of the show.
Mm-hmm.
I was worried about it. I didn't know if it was going to be as rich as it was, but they hit all the major plot points, I think. There were some differences. The violence was like, it felt live action accurate. Like it was good. I'm pretty pleased with the finale. Honestly, it was good.
Yeah, I fully agree.
Final moments here. We have Sokka Snacks. You guys have a moment that was Sokka Snack for you off the hip.
Hit it.
Let's go, Alec.
I think a lot of mine are just actually just Zhao's lines throughout the show. We've already touched on some, but I just want to touch on a couple more because he says to Aang as he's holding the Moon Spirit, "I can wipe out an entire race of benders. Like, do you know what that's like?" And Aang's like, "Well, yeah, I mean, because I'm the last airbender, you know." And then he's like, "Master of three elements, you know, doesn't sound as good, huh?"
I remember that. I was like, okay.
I love it, dude. I've really come around for him. Because in the beginning, like, I felt like he was, like, meek and not...
Yeah, really, you really didn't like him. I remember that. I
still like the other version more. Mm-hmm. In the animated series, but I've really grown to appreciate this because he's so weaselly and like, you know, but he's quick witted, like he's very witty more than he is strong. Like Zuko beats him in like five hits,
Like,
it's not even a battle really. So, yeah, my Sokka Snack are those lines because I think it, you know, just in like how Sokka brings comedy relief. I think some of these lines bring that comedic relief that we need too.
Agreed. Kate, you got one?
I don't really know. I was actually very moved that Princess Yue froze Sokka in place. I just, it set it up perfectly for me in my head of like, we know she's about to make the sacrifice and she's making it so that no one can stop her. Like, yeah. This is completely her decision. And I kind of love that they did that.
Like that?
Yeah. It wasn't like, you have to let me go. It was like, I'm going, bro.
Yeah,
it
wasn't a...
Stay over there.
Do you mind if I do this thing? Like, I think it would be really good. It was like, no, I'm taking charge. This is my life. I get to decide how I die, I guess.
Yeah. She's like, I put this wig on this morning, not for nothing. Yes, 100%. I think my Sokka snack might be the line that Aang said to Zuko when he shows up. He's like, go easy on him. And he's like, I won't. And he's like, I wasn't talking to you.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. That was pretty cool.
That was a good line. There was some good lines in this one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Eric, what's
your... My Sokka snack is very simple. It's just big fish.
Big fish.
Good big fish.
No. You're thinking of Real Big Fish, the Aaron Barrett ska band.
Oh, you're right. I'm thinking of the Ewan McGregor Tim Burton movie from the early 2000s, Big Fish.
I love that movie.
Big Fish is so good.
It's so good. Y'all want to cry after watching Big Fish? Watch Big Fish.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's right. That is correct.
Yeah, sorry. They got the name of the episode wrong. They called it Legends. It's actually Big Fish.
Big Fish.
Big Fish.
You guys see that old Godzilla movie, Godzilla 2000? Do you ever see that? I think it
was once. Yeah,
it's called Godzilla 2000.
Yeah.
With Matthew Broderick.
I think of the opening of that movie literally all the time because he has the lighter and he's like unconscious and comatose. Yep. And he's got the lighter in front of that guy and he's like, "Tell us what you saw." And he's like, "You look to the camera." And he goes, "Godzilla." Godzilla, and then it's the opening of the movie. I'm like, dude, this is great. I love that. That's the best part.
And it all stayed at that level the whole time.
Exactly.
Okay. Hear me out. This is how they're gonna start season two. They're gonna start it like that, except they're gonna be in Ba Sing Se.
They're gonna fight.
And they're gonna use June or what's her name? Julie.
Yes.
In Ba Sing Se.
They're going to find one of the Fire Nation guys that he's like washed ashore in the Earth Kingdom. What did you see? Tell us. Godzilla.
Big fish.
Oh, man. I'm going to
bring it back ahead for a second. Hang on, Corey. There was one thing that I wanted to ask because I can't remember if they said anything about this, but in the animated show, they make a point at the end where Paku is like, we're going to go down to the Southern Water Tribe. We need to reunite with our brothers and sisters.
Because he wants to see his old girlfriend.
Yeah,
that's right.
Did they say anything like that?
No.
No. He's like, Northern Water Tribe forever. No. You're on your own.
Paku also watched that goofy scene at the very beginning of the season where Grand like, read that weird thing. And
he said no thanks.
He's like, no, actually, I realize why we're done.
Yep. That was it. Yeah.
Anybody who reads from a cue card and is like real life NPC, not for
who
me.
Was the who was the MVP for you guys this episode? I think it was Zhao personally.
Oh, I'm gonna give it to Aang. Honestly, I think this was the moment. Like my Sokka snack's big fish finally had his big old moment.
Avatar
Aang.
I like it.
I mean, Yue.
Yue, okay.
Yeah.
What, you gave it to? I was waiting because I was like, you're gonna give it to Katara.
She still hasn't earned my trust yet.
What?
Oh, wow.
Gosh. Wow. We might talk about that later.
Well, I will say, mine is definitely Katara. Every scene that she's in is super powerful. Like, she's really finding her footing here. She defeats Zuko. She defeats Paku's, you know, misogynistic view of battle. She gets called a master for the first time, whether deserved or not.
That is true.
You know, she, you know, and she...
You're granted
she
a seat owns, on this council, man. But we do not give you
she
the
does.
Right to that.
She does. She like, finally pulls her weight in everything.
Yeah, she's that's boss, true. And this is her episode.
She is.
So she's the MVP.
Okay.
Fair enough.
That's fair.
I like it.
Overall, she didn't die, though, so Princess you are.
That's fair. That's her last chance.
Did she die, though? Yes, I think overall satisfying ending to the season as a whole. I'm excited to kind of look back and talk about the season just kind of in whole. We're gonna do that next episode. We have one more episode of the Avatar Show, this limited run season, this new test by Utini. I don't know how we will bring this show back. We may do another season if and when they bring back the season. More to talk about that, I think, in the epilogue episode, but I think that is going to do it for this week's episode of the Avatar Show. If you are looking for other fun shows, be sure to check out the rest of our lineup in the Utini Network. I do have to give some very special thank yous to Brian Dooley, Carl Sander, Michael Fry, and Raymond Bozinski on our High Council, and James T., Ashley Ingalls, Colton Fife, and Chris Carrizo on our Captain Tier for your amazing support on Patreon. Keep the party going over in Discord. We have a special channel, Avatar Netflix, you can find and check out. We will talk about how we felt about everything in the show. Thank you to our behind-the-scenes stars, Kyle, for making us sound good, my fellow host for juggling all the things, and Wes for the Utini Network support. That's going to be it for this. Keep exploring, keep sharing, and let's keep having a great time together. We will catch you next week for our final episode of the Utini Avatar Show. See you soon! Support for this show and all Utini Network podcasts comes from the United Patreon community. At the heart of the Utiniverse, the United is where our most passionate fans gather to deepen their journey through the worlds of Avatar, Star Wars, and the broader universe of nerd culture and sports. By joining the United on Patreon, you gain access to an exclusive realm filled with content that takes you behind the scenes of our YouTube channel, provides ad-free listening of all of our podcasts, and offers regular insider updates. More than just a content hub, United is a vibrant community. Through organized events, we create connections, fostering a space where every voice is heard and valued. By becoming part of the United, you're not just supporting us, you're enhancing a community dedicated to celebrating and exploring our passions together. To start your journey, visit patreon.com/utini. Together, we can build a stronger community, united by our love for these incredible fandoms. Thank you for your support, and remember, the adventure continues in every episode of The Avatar Show and across all Utini Network podcasts.